Champaign Danville Overhead Doors for its support of Focus 580. Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates. Today's programming is made possible in part by grants from 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign and Crossroads Global Handcrafts, 428 North Main in Bloomington, providing income to third world artisans by marketing their handcrafts and telling their stories in North America. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Mall in Urbana, with more than a dozen shops, businesses, and restaurants, including Tang Dynasty Restaurant, So Sassy, Mr. John's School of Cosmetology, and the Arthritis Foundation.
Good morning. This is Focus 580, a morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton. Glad you could listen. During this hour of the show, we'll talk about home maintenance and improvement, something we do once a month on the show with Hank Spies of the Spies Home Inspection Service. This is your chance to get your questions asked and answered, ideally, about fixing things around the house. And Hank always joins us on the third Monday of the month, but he was gone last week, so we thought we'd have him today so we wouldn't miss a whole month. And so we welcome your questions. The phone number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. And we also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. Your questions for Hank Spies are welcome. And we couldn't let you get out of doing the show for even a month, Hank.
Well, that's quite all right. I had to be out of the country last weekend, so get a chance to get back in. I always enjoy it.
Well, very good. And believe it or not, our lines have filled up already. So let's go ahead and talk to some listeners.
Yeah, my phone started ringing at 8:02 this morning.
So this is your chance to get out of the office and answer right. The telephones over here. Okay. First up, Urbana listener on line number one. Good morning.
Good morning. I would like some tips on leaving your house in the winter for a couple months and what you should do to keep it safe.
Well, first of all, I probably would not turn off the heat. I would set the thermostat as low as it would go, which is usually around 50 degrees.
Okay.
And if you have any lines, first of all, I would turn off the water at the meter. So in case it sprung a leak someplace for some reason, we don't ever flood the place. After that, just button it up and go.
So turning off the water at the meter, do you have to do anything else to any of the other appliances?
No, I would turn the water heater down to pilot. And from there on, you should go. Because if you're going to maintain the house, and if you set the thermostat at 50, no place in the house should be go below 40. If you were really going to completely abandon the place for 4 months or so, then we would be a matter of putting antifreeze in the traps and all this sort of thing. But as long as the heat stays on, I would not do that. Now, it is possible at the local, like Menards, Lowe's, whatever, to get a thermostat that you can plug into a lamp and put it in a window and so your neighbors can see it, and so that it would turn on the light if the temperature in the house dropped below 40, which would be a tell somebody, hey, something has gone wrong here, come check.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call. And obviously, the reason you don't want the pipes to freeze.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But likewise, most of the time, we don't need to drain everything down.
Mm-hmm.
If we just set the water heater back to pilot, that will keep it warm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awfully nice to have a neighbor who will kind of keep an eye out on for a light that goes on to indicate there's a problem.
Absolutely. Okay, well, we'll go next to another Urbana listener on line number two. Good morning, you're on Focus 580.
Hello,
mm-hmm.
Hank. I need a new roof, and I got some estimates,
mm-hmm.
and one of them was for $1,600. He wanted to put a new roof over the old roof, and I got two other estimates who said the old roof was in too bad shape and that they needed to rip it off and put on a new roof. And one of the estimates was $3,300, and the other one was $6,800. And I'm just wondering if you can, the one that was $6,800 wanted to put in four of those square box ventilator things.
Mm-hmm.
But I already have an electric exhaust fan, so I'm wondering why I need those. I've never had.
Well, one of the reasons.
Why is there such a big difference in the price?
One guy wants to do it, and the other one will do it if he can make enough money at it. Basically,
doesn't really need the business.
Doesn't really need the business.
Yeah.
They both seemed very straightforward and
yeah.
answered my questions. I thought truthfully.
How many layers of roof are up there now?
One.
Just one. Is it badly cupped and curled?
Yes.
Okay, then they're probably right. You need to strip it, and you won't get nearly as good a job putting a second layer over them.
Well, I feel comfortable having them rip it off.
Okay. As far as the vents are concerned, you have to remember, is your exhaust fan for the attic thermostatically controlled?
Yes.
Okay, that means it doesn't run in the wintertime, and that's when we need the ventilation the most.
Really? Well, I have two windows, one on each end of the house, and I thought that, and I have them open in the summer. Do I need to open them or close them in the winter? And will that serve as ventilation?
We need some ventilation in the wintertime. Now, the fact that you're, how old is the house?
75 years old.
Okay, how old is the roof that's on there now?
30.
Okay, if it hung in there for 30 years, you probably don't need more ventilation. When you said they were badly cupped and so on, this often happens due to a lack of ventilation. However, if they've lasted more than 20 years, I would say your ventilation should be adequate the way it is.
Okay, so you're saying that the two windows in each end of the house is enough ventilation?
Yes. Usually the problem with windows is the snow can blow through them.
Yeah.
It would be better when you are putting on this new roof, if you would put a continuous ridge vent on.
Oh, can they do that in an old house?
Yes.
They can?
Yes.
Oh.
So that would be the best solution.
Okay. I'm writing that down. A continuous ridge vent would be the best solution.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm still not clear about whether to leave the windows open in the winter.
No, leave them closed.
Leave them closed in the
Otherwise,
winter?
You're too likely to get snow blowing in.
I see. Okay. And is there anything else you can tell me about putting on a new roof?
No, not particularly. You have to realize that a light-colored shingle will absorb less heat in the summertime.
Uh-huh.
And generally speaking, the light-colored shingles tend to last a little bit better than the real dark ones, but much depends upon the appearance of the house.
Uh-huh.
As far as whether you want to go with plain ordinary shingles or the so-called 25- and 30-year architectural grade, the cost per year is generally less for the 20-year shingles.
20-year shingles, and that's just the ordinarily
yep.
ordinary shingles?
That's the ordinary shingle.
And that's a better buy?
Usually it is a better buy.
Okay, and the architectural shingles are the ones where one is long and one is short and one is long
yep.
and one is short?
Yes.
And
yeah.
they're not worth the added cost, is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay.
It's only appearance.
It's only for appearance. I don't like them anyway.
Okay.
All right, thank you, Hank.
All right.
Bye.
Okay. Best of luck. We'll go right on to our next caller in Terre Haute, line number 3. Good morning.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a deck rebuilt, and they used a 5/4 deck wood.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed it's treated, of course. I noticed that when it gets wet, some of the planks will get real dark and absorb the water, apparently, and they... stay that way. You can feel the moisture in them for days after
mm-hmm.
the others have dried, or at least a couple of days. And then some of these pieces are even where the grain changes. Maybe one half of the plank will be wet and the other half will be dry. I wondered, is there a defect or what's going on?
No, I think basically what you need to do, even pressure-treated wood benefits from a water-repellent treatment.
Uh-huh.
And just spray that on, and that should help considerably. Do you happen to know what type of treatment was used?
It was the new kind without the arsenic.
Okay. I hope when they built it, they used stainless steel or triple galvanized fasteners.
Yeah, they use special screws, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
That's good, because the new pressure-treated wood is very corrosive, so we have to go with special fasteners on it.
Yeah, they told me they did that. Right.
Okay, well, as I say, I would try hitting the thing with a water repellent. Can be clear, doesn't have to be stained or anything like that, but it will help prevent the water absorption.
Do you have any idea, though, why even in the same piece of wood, like half of it would absorb and the other half wouldn't?
Well, it all depends upon how much of the pressure treatment was absorbed, and it does make a difference by the grain of the wood as to how much they can get into it.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's the basic reason.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks for the call. Now, wood is not a consistent medium, certainly.
No, it's not.
And that's likely to have very, very wide variations in even the same piece of wood.
Right. Well, as a matter of fact, the termites can tell the difference. They will follow 1 year's worth of growth in a piece and not eat the rest.
How about that? Now, in terms of this treatment that repels water, is there a general, you know, rule of thumb every couple of years, maybe?
About every couple of 2 or 3 years, it will help considerably.
Okay. Well, our lines remain pretty full. We have one line open. We're talking this morning with Hank Spies of the Spies Home Inspection, taking your questions on home improvement and maintenance, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. We'll go next to West Lafayette, Indiana, listener on line number 4. Good morning. Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
How do we explain a rancid or rank smell in the soft water?
I am not a specialist in water treatments. I think it has to do with the this. I take it soft water means it's gone through a water softener. That's not my area. I can't help you there, I'm afraid.
Okay. Still on water heaters. What is the safe care and treatment of water heaters so they don't explode? I've heard of that.
Well, the main thing is to be sure that you have a pressure relief valve, the kind that has a little lever on it that you can test it. Mm-hmm. You pull this little lever and water should come out there.
That's at the top of the thin pipe that runs the length. Of the tank.
Yes, it'll be on the top of the tank, or on the new water heaters, it will be actually screwed into the side of the tank. It should not be more than 6 inches away from where the water comes out. When you're looking at these old water heaters, they sometimes got them in remote locations. And yes, it should be within 6 inches of the water heater tank itself.
Now, what about the faucet I see near the bottom?
Okay.
I'm sometimes told that you have to open it up to drain it and clear it occasionally, but I'm scared I'll never get it shut again.
Well, it's certainly something you don't do when the hardware store is closed. But it is a good idea, depending upon your water quality, to open that thing up wide open, run 5 gallons or so of water out about once a year. That way, any sediment that accumulates in the bottom of the water heater will theoretically be washed out, and an accumulation of sediment will decrease the efficiency of the water heater substantially. But with that faucet and that little lever on the safety valve is one of those things you never check them when the hardware store is closed, because
not sure I'd dare it anyway.
Well. In that case, you might consider replacing the valve or the water heater, as the case may be.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
It is important, I think, that people do check the safety valves on water heaters, because if the valve should stick closed so it does not blow off when things got too hot, and the gas valve or electric thermostat would stick, the water just gets hotter and hotter until it develops enough pressure that the tank explodes. This is roughly equal to a half a case of dynamite. Mm-hmm. We want to be darn sure those things work. The last data I had on one that blew was in a strip mall in Washington State. It went out through the roof, 500 feet off, across a highway into a parking lot, did $500,000 damage and put four people in the hospital. So we're not kidding. Remember, this is steam. We used to run locomotives with it. So we want to be sure that that safety valve works.
Well, very good. Let's go on next to another Urbana listener on line number one. Good morning.
Hello, Hank.
Yeah.
I want to ask a little bit about a roof, and first I want to talk about a high-efficiency furnace. The installers hung the 3-inch PVC pipes hanging across the ceiling of our family room, and I'd like to relocate those in less visible places. And one option is to go up the old chimney flue. Is that an option?
Is there anything else hooked to that chimney flue? Where's the water heater?
No, the water heater's elsewhere.
I see no problem at all going up the old chimney flue.
Well, the only problem with the flue is it's not straight. Is there a flexible pipe that is code-approved for that?
I don't know of one. There may be. Because generally speaking, on these direct vent, high efficiency things, they specify the PVC, I am not sure that whether there is a flexible one for that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can go up alongside it through your same, usually the same structural chase, and come out alongside the chimney.
Yeah, that would be difficult. Well, the other option there would be to have the intake come down the flue. Is that codable?
As long as there's nothing else hooked to the flue, I don't see where it would be a problem.
Mm-hmm. I could just plug in the intake to the old opening for the flue, and that would be sufficient?
I believe it would.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, yeah, I think I can get the exhaust out another way between the joists in another direction.
Okay. You want to be sure that your total length doesn't exclude that recommended by the furnace manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, they add feet for elbows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, these distances would be less than what they've got in there now. So
okay, should be no problem.
Would work. Okay, and the other question about the roof is I have some shingles that are curling. It's not general, it's spotty. And I wondered what we're talking about there.
You're probably talking about quality control in the original manufacturer.
Uh-huh.
And we have to realize that ordinary asphalt shingles wholesale for about 5 cents a pound. And how much quality control do you get in a product that is wholesaling for 5 cents a pound? If your answer is nearly none, you're absolutely correct.
Well, this has been on there 5 years. Can I get back on the roofer?
You probably could go back to the manufacturer as long as there's reasonable ventilation in the attic.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is that first layer or second layer?
This is a second layer.
Don't know whether you're going to have any luck going back on the manufacturer for second layer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But one of the things that you could do is go up there with some roofing cement and a caulking gun and squirt a dab under the ones that are curly and stick them back down.
Oh, I wondered if that would work, yeah.
Yes, certainly.
Mm-hmm. That would be a possibility, yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much, Hank.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks for the call. We're talking with Hank Spies this morning of the Spies Home Inspection Service here in Champaign-Urbana about home maintenance and improvement. We have a couple callers and time for plenty of others. If you'd like to join us, the number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Next up, an Indiana listener on line number two. Good morning.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I received a pamphlet from the gas company, you know, telling people ways they can save gas and doing certain things. One thing they mentioned that I didn't think would make much sense with a gravity-fed furnace, but anyway, they said about turning the thermostat down in the evening when you go to bed and turning it back up to your comfort zone in the morning when you get out of bed. And I thought, this sounded like a pretty good idea. Then I started thinking, God, I've got a gravity-fed furnace, and it's going to be there forever. There's no money to put in a high-efficiency furnace, for example. And I thought perhaps the gas company was probably assuming that you would have, you know, a fairly new furnace, or at least one's not gravity-fed. But I just wanted to find out if you had any ideas on whether that would give some savings over the winter if I did turn it down.
Yes, it will, but don't turn it down too far. Turn it down no more than 10 degrees, and if it's 10 degrees or colder outside, don't turn it down at all.
Okay. In other words, if the outside temperature hits 10 or below 10, keep it at the natural comfort zone I would have during the day.
Right, because otherwise it just takes too long to heat back up again.
Yeah, I was thinking along those lines, because I turned it on recently just to take the nip out of the – we got cold over here. And it didn't take a real long time to get up, but I started thinking, God, that'd be a lot of heat, you know, in the morning, like 4 or 5, you know, I don't know how long it would take. I don't know if you find out, but I usually keep it set at 70, so 60 would be okay until it gets really cold outside.
Right.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. We'll go next to a listener on a cell phone, line number 4. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I live in a condominium, and I'm on the association board. After construction, because of a sewer problem, the builder had to cut through the slab, which is at ground level, and that's where the parking is and so on, in order to deal with the sewer. Well, ever since then, we have received water through, we believe, at the cut. It's hard to tell because it's covered with a carpet and stuff like that. What would you suggest doing in a case like that? I guess my basic question is there a way to stop the water coming through, and is that a common place for water to infiltrate? I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
Well, it's not particularly a common place for infiltration. I would be tempted to be getting a sewer cleaner out there, and perhaps even one that has a camera that they run down the sewer line and check and see whether the sewer is still broken there, that it was not. A sewer should never be able to back up under a slab. So the question is, did they get the thing repaired? And if so, it still shouldn't happen unless the sewer was blocked somewhere. Now, you didn't say whether this was a storm sewer or a sanitary sewer. I hope it's storm sewer. Generally speaking, it won't back up unless there's a blockage someplace. And there are several firms in the area that have TV cameras that they can run down a drain and check and see whether the sewer itself is blocked or whether it is broken. And I suspect they just didn't get the brake fixed.
Okay. Well, after a flurry of calls, our lines are suddenly open. So if you'd like to join us, now would be a good time. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Your questions on home maintenance are welcome. Speaking about furnaces, this would be a good time of the year to check a few things.
Yes. If it's been more than a couple of years since you had the furnace checked, it would be a good time to do it. And particularly as we switch from cooling to heating, it's probably time to clean, replace, or whatever your furnace filter so that we get good airflow. It's gotten to the point now where there are quite a few different varieties of filters on the market. We have the 69-cent ones, which will catch dust bunnies, but not much of anything else, up to replaceable filters that cost $10 or so that will catch almost everything, not quite, but almost. If you want to read about what is available and what they will do, go to my website, www.hankspees.com, and go into the heating section, and you'll find an article there on furnace filters that describes the various varieties, costs, and efficiencies.
Mm-hmm. And basically, you pay for what you get.
That's right. As I say, the 69-center catches dust bunnies. The $10 one will probably go to as far as tree pollens, but not grass pollens.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we have several callers who have joined us. We'll go next to someone on the road on line number 1. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering about putting in a wood-burning fireplace in my home, and what considerations I should take into account, and how much it should cost?
Well, cost varies tremendously depending on what has to be done for flues and so on. Wood-burning fireplaces have an efficiency of somewhere between plus and minus 10%. Don't count on them getting any particular great benefits on utility bills. The other disadvantage to a wood-burning fireplace is you are dragging dirty logs, bark, etc., through the house to fire it, and then you are hauling the ashes back out through the house, and my wife may not be real happy about that. I have had two wood-burning fireplaces. I put in gas logs. I find I use them at least five times as often as I ever did a wood-burning fireplace. And while I grew up burning wood, I have no intention of doing it again. It's one of those things, but wood is not inexpensive unless you have your own timber land and a chainsaw and lots of time. Mm-hmm. There's nothing cheap about a wood-burning fireplace.
Yeah.
And the other thing is you should have a set of glass doors on it, because we need to reduce the airflow up the chimney when the damper has to remain open because the thing is still smoking, but you're not getting any particular amount of heat out.
It is charming, though, to look at.
Well, I have seen both gas and electric fireplaces mm-hmm. that I defy you to tell me, if you were more than 5 feet away, what you were seeing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have a gas log fireplace, and it is wonderful. So I understand what you're saying. Well, a couple other callers. Let's move right on to a Champagne listener, line number two. Good morning.
Yes, I heard you a little bit ago when talking about water heaters, saying that the draining and the test of the blow-off valve shouldn't be done unless the hardware store is open.
Right.
I didn't catch what it is that can go wrong and what you would do at the hardware store.
Okay. Usually it's a matter of the valve reseating so it doesn't drip, in which case you would probably have to replace the faucet washer in each case. If they have not been tested for a while, the chances of them reseating when you've opened the thing up and then closed it back down are not real high. So if you check it at least every year, they will probably work. If it hasn't been checked for 5 years, the faucet washer has gotten so hard and so on, it may not seal. So you must be prepared to replace a faucet washer if it doesn't reseat.
I guess I'm. How would I know if something didn't reseat? What exactly does that mean?
It would drip.
Okay, so that can be the case either with the valve with the lever on it or the one at the bottom.
That's correct.
Okay, and in order to replace the faucet washer, I would guess you have to turn off the water and so forth.
You have to turn off the water to the water heater at least.
Uh-huh.
The one on the bottom, you will have to drain the whole water heater. The safety valve, if you turn the pressure off to it and hold it open for a minute or two, you shouldn't have to drain it.
I see. Okay, very good. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks for the call. Is that something that is easy enough for most people to do, to take that faucet off and replace the washer?
If you're a do-it-yourselfer of any reasonable skill, yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, I've never done it, so I think I'm going to have to. When I get out of the studio this morning, I'm going to go check my water heater.
Okay.
And the hardware store will be open, so
right.
That'll be good timing. All right, we'll go on, and we have several callers waiting. Next up, someone in Champaign on line number three. Good morning.
Hi, Hank. I was wondering if you would talk about caulking compound. Every time I go to the hardware store, there's Alex Plus, Ultra Plus, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just wondering, what's the difference?
Well, they're designed to stick to different things and have different capabilities of being able to stretch and compress and so on. So if you have something that's continuously wet, you want one kind of caulk. If you have just your caulking pieces of wood together, you probably want one of the good urethane or caulks or something of that sort. You should not use silicone caulk on anything that's porous. Okay. Silicone caulk is what you would use between tub and tile, mm-hmm. or something of that sort, but it does not stick well to wood.
I'll be darned. Okay.
So it's a matter of what you were going to use them for. And generally speaking, you get what you pay for. If you get the 69-cent special, don't count on it lasting more than a year, if that.
Sure.
If you are getting a have a situation where the material moves quite a bit in terms of temperature expansion, contraction, then your more expensive caulk is going to be far superior as far as being able to withstand shrink, compression, and stretching.
Okay. I know, like, the it's MP1 that's the heavy-duty stuff. Isn't it MP1?
That's somebody's brand or whatever, because
it goes between, like, brick and wood and everything.
Yeah.
But it's nasty to use. Is there something else, then, that's not as nasty to use?
Well, I don't know. The urethanes and acrylics both work for that. And you're going to have to smooth them down. You know, they tell you to smooth it off with your finger. Try an ice cube.
Oh, how wonderful.
That will smooth them, and yet the water keeps it so it doesn't drag and this sort of thing. And when it gets crudded up with caulk, you throw it away.
Bless your heart. Well, thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Besides the water heater testing, that's got to be the tip of the day, sounds like. All right. We'll go next to an Indiana listener on line number 4. Good morning.
My turn?
Mm-hmm.
Maintaining a 100-year-old barn, the timbers of which in many cases are hardwood of old trees. The timbers in places are covered with holes from powder post beetles. Is that a problem, and what can I do?
It's not a problem. Ignore it.
All right.
Basically, the powder post beetles came in with the timber the day it was built.
Mm.
And they all those holes are where they escaped later. And I doubt very much that any powder post beetles have come in since then. So what you are seeing are all of the old escape ones. Now, if the infestation was extensive, when there was something sharp, screwdriver or something like that, but I suspect that you will find that most of the wood is still in good shape.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call. And if it's not in good shape, then you got to replace some.
Well,
wood.
If you're going to have to replace some if the whole thing is half turned to powder or something like that, which occasionally does occur, but most of the time these came in with the wood, particularly when we get into these old structures. If they left any bark on, and they oftentimes did 100 years ago, they come in between the tree and the bark, and. I have run into some where it showed up in hardwood that had been stored in a lumber yard. That apparently there was an infestation somewhere in the lumber yard, and they transferred to new hardwood flooring. But most of the time, that's not the case.
Oh, very good. We'll go next to a Champaign listener on line number 1. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi, yes. A friend of mine bought, I think it was about a 35-year-old home, and I noticed that the gas line from the gas meter into the home is all copper pipe, and I was wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Well, my thought is primarily Tempest and Teapot. In Champaign and Urbana, copper gas lines are prohibited.
Mm-hmm.
The theory being that after you've run gas that we get here has enough sulfur in it that after you've run through the copper line long enough, a coating of copper sulfide will form on the inside of the pipe.
Right.
If it gets thick enough, it can flake off and get in a valve and would keep it from closing. Interesting thing is, if we go over to Decatur, you are only allowed to use black iron, not copper. Well, black iron pipe can rust and you can get rust flakes inside. But the interesting thing to me is the gas well supplying both cities is exactly the same well.
Hmm.
Basically, my guess is that the requirement for black iron pipe was put in to give the Plumbers Union more work than copper.
Mm-hmm. so it's not really necessary to be replaced then.
City code says when you replace the appliance, you're supposed to replace the line. Do I think it is necessary? No, I don't. But there are a number of laws and codes that I don't think are particularly necessary, which we enforce vigorously.
Right. Okay. Well, the reason I asked is because the flex hose between the main input or the main line and the water heater needs replacement, and a plumber did come out and then said, "Oh well, you need to replace that main copper feed line that comes off of the gas meter as well."
Well.
For, like $1,000.
Yeah. If it were my house, I'd find a different plumber.
Okay. Good answer. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. So what is the material that is code in Champaign-Urbana?
Black iron.
Okay. Good to know. We have about 15 minutes left with Hank Spies of the Spies Home Inspection Service taking your questions about home maintenance and improvement. We have one caller waiting and time for others if you'd like to join us. The lines have been pretty jammed, so if you've been waiting, you can now get through. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Next up, a listener in Chicago, I believe, actually, on line number two. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I hear this ad for these air cleaners or air purifiers on the radio all the time, negative charge and positive charge. Do they work?
Yes. The other question is, do you need it?
No, I'm just curious about it. People talk about, smoking odors and this and that.
Yes, they do work.
Do they have to have a fan on?
Well, you've got to move air over someplace, yes. It may be a very slow-running fan, hopefully quiet.
Uh-huh.
But, yes, you've got to move the air through the unit.
And with the material you're taking out of there, would that collect on this device?
Yes.
Oh, I see. All right, then, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Good. So basically what you're doing is you're charging the particles. And so
right.
They then stick to this oppositely charged.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right, you're putting a charge on the particles and then providing a surface that is opposite charge so they stick.
Yeah.
And, yes, it will go down. It will even take out smoke.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Does it work for pollen and so forth as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it certainly does.
Good. All right, a couple of callers have joined us. We'll go next to an Urbana listener, line number one. Good morning.
Hello, Hank.
Yes.
I'm back. I was asking you about the high-efficiency furnace venting.
Mm-hmm.
And running the the out vent between the joists, how much clearance do I have to maintain between that PVC and any electrical wiring that's going across?
Well, as long as you don't wrap the wire around it, I wouldn't worry about it.
Oh, even touching?
It can even touch.
Oh, okay. That simplifies it very good.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Is there concern there about the temperature of the PVC?
Yeah, PVC, that on those type of furnaces, the temperature in the PVC line is probably most 180 degrees, and with the plastic in between, that's not going to hurt anything.
Okay, very good. Next up, a listener in Rantoul on line number three. Good morning.
Hi, Hank. Got a question for you. I'm getting my roof redone, reshingled. What's the advantage of having, or is there an advantage of having these roof ridge vents?
Okay. The combination of a ridge vent plus vents in the overhangs, the soffit vents, is the best attic ventilation system you can have. And this tends to control the temperature in the attic in the summertime, reduce your cooling load. It also tends to keep the shingles cooler, and they last longer. So I would say a combination of soffit vents and continuous ridge vent is far superior to any other system of attic ventilation we have.
Okay, great. Thanks, Hank.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much for the call. And again, the lines, we've run through a bunch of calls, and lines are open, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. One of the callers, I think maybe one of our first callers, had to do with roof estimates. And this is something that I noticed, too, the last time we had a house re-roofed. The estimates range from $1,500 to, like, $4,800. And you made the comment that, you know, one roofer wants the job and the other wants the job if you're willing to pay that much, but they don't probably need the business.
Okay, there is a difference in quality.
Yeah.
Without any question. And you have to get into the fine print on the contract as to exactly what he's going to do. If he is going to put in all new flashings, it's going to be more expensive. You may or may not need, but you do need flashings, flashing boots, this sort of thing. We need metal drip edge and metal rake edge. And if you're going to put all those things on, yeah, the high price is probably justified. If you're going to have somebody who's just going to go up there and nail on a second layer of shingles, and you hope he knows how to do it, and not all of them do, there is a requirement that a roofer be licensed by the state of Illinois. As far as I can tell, the only criteria for getting a roofer's license is that you have insurance. There is no skill test or knowledge test or anything involved, and there's an awful lot of people out there who hold themselves forth as roofers who own a pickup truck and a hammer and a ladder, and you many times get what you pay for.
Okay. Well, with that, we'll go on to some more callers since the line's filled up again. Line number one in Champaign is next. Good morning.
Hi, I have Masonite siding, and we're thinking about replacing it with vinyl. And I don't know what things we should be looking for.
Why are you wanting to replace it?
Well, I guess we've had we do have a mold problem that seems to come on annually. It's at the point it's either ready to be painted or it needs to be resided. And a lot of our neighbors have replaced their Masonite siding due to the law. I guess there's a class action lawsuit about regarding it.
Well, it depends. Some brands there were. Masonite siding can be perfectly good as long as it is properly painted and kept painted. If you ignore the need for paint for more than a year when it needs it, you're done for life.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
And the most prevalent problem is the fact that people spray the paint on the siding and they do not get enough paint on the bottom edge of each piece. And water starts wicking up from the bottom edge, and that will destroy it quickly. So, okay, now, vinyl siding, again, this is primarily the skill of the applicator.
Okay.
Yes, sir, the thicker the better, but the applicator skill is the primary thing. Vinyl siding looks like it should be able to be installed by the village idiot, but it shouldn't be. It's one of those things where there definitely are some things you do and you don't do, and particularly the way it is flashed around windows and doors, this type of thing. So this is basically investigate thoroughly the person you're getting a bid from.
Okay. And, Hank, I just have one more question. We have a two-story house, and it is always warm on the second floor in the summertime, and I'm always wondering, you know, we don't have a continuous ridge vent after I'm listening to your program today. What would be a good way to, an attic vent be helpful? I mean, a fan, I guess that's what I'm looking for.
It very well might be. I don't know how hot your attic gets in the summertime, and what ventilation, if any, you have. However, what you really need is a set of dampers in your ductwork, so that you can control the proportion of airflow from the cooling unit between floors. In the wintertime, we bring in warm air at the bottom floor because warm air rises. In the summertime, cold air sinks, so we want to bring it in usually at the ceiling or high on the second floor. And so we want to set our dampers so that we get much more airflow to the second floor in the summertime and more to the first floor in the wintertime. And very often that's all that's necessary.
Okay.
And, yes, your furnace man can put in said dampers if you don't have them.
Okay. Is that enough? He needs to pay me a visit for a furnace recheck, so I'll have him look at it for me. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thanks for the call. Another Champaign listener on line number two is next. Good morning.
we've been talking about roofing a lot. I was wondering what your opinion of the white rubber sheeting on roofs instead of shingles is and how the price compares.
Usually that is only used on roofs that are too flat for shingles.
Oh, okay.
Generally speaking, the white rubber roofs will be at least double the cost of the shingles, but shingles don't work on flat roofs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it...
But it would be very durable in all temperatures and that, I mean...
It does pretty well. I won't say it necessarily lasts longer than shingles. But yes, it can be a very good product, but it is primarily used on roofs that are too flat for shingles.
Okay. And would are there a lot of companies making this, or, I mean, would some be better than others, or?
Oh, there's probably about a half dozen companies that make them, yes.
Okay. And you think they're all about the same on a whole, or in quality?
Well, I haven't done a consumer's report type test on them, but generally speaking, again, this has more to do with the skill of the installer and than it does on the product.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. And that's because you really want to seal it down.
Yes, and there are some that are mechanically fastened, there are some that are adhesive fastened, and again, we're all back to the flashing problems.
Mm-hmm. So water doesn't get underneath it.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, a couple callers left. We'll go next to Urbana, listener on line number 3. Good morning.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm working on my roof as we speak here.
Okay.
I've discovered a couple things. The deck is 4x8 plywood, and
yes.
At the joints, I've noticed in a couple of spots where it's kind of warped a little bit and they're mismatched. And is there a trick to getting those to join flush with each other again, other than splicing in a piece?
Well, you don't necessarily splice in a piece. Usually that happens when the sheets are set too close together.
Uh-huh.
And so that when the plywood expands, it buckles up at the joints. And what we do is just go up there with an electric cutoff saw and set to cut only the depth of the plywood and just take one kerf out of each joint so that there's room for the plywood to move.
Okay. Actually, I think there is enough play between the sheets, but it did warp in one spot.
Okay. Are you going to strip the thing off?
You mean the...
The shingles.
Oh, yeah, they're already stripped off. Uh-huh.
Okay, then you use what's called an H-clip that fits over the edges of the plywood and keeps them in line.
Okay, where would I get one of those?
Any of the lumber yards.
Okay, and I can do that when the plywood's already down?
It's going to get a little bit more difficult. Generally speaking, it should have been done when the roof was put on.
Okay, I'll look for that. My other question, probably just a quick one. I'm doing the ridge vent, and I have some existing vents, maybe two on top. Is it right that I should cover those up to
That's correct.
Have that work effectively?
That's correct.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Okay, good luck with that roof.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
All right, we have just maybe about 3 minutes left. We've got a caller in Normal on line number 4 next. Good morning.
Hi, I was wondering if you had a recommendation about the type of ridge vent. My lumberyard sold me a plastic roll, and I've seen the type that looks like a scrub pad, too.
Yeah. Well, actually, the wind tunnel tests that we did at the university indicates that one with an exterior snow baffle works the best.
Okay.
Now, this means that you have the slot, and sticking out from the bottom is a piece of metal, plastic, whatever, that then turns up so that anything that is blowing up the slope gets diverted over the top of the ridge vent.
Good.
The ones with the internal baffles tend to be leak a little more snow, and they also tend not to produce as good a ventilation as the one with the exterior vents.
And how wide would the cut be on the ridge and the plywood?
Usually you go by an inch and a half on each side.
And does it go all the way to the gable end?
Not necessarily. You can stop it short so that you don't have to have them in the overhang on your gable ends.
Okay.
One of the ones that showed up best in the wind tunnel test was the Venta Ridge brand. This is an aluminum one. It is not a roll plastic one.
Okay. Venter Ridge. One other question. What is the recommended R value of insulation in the attic?
38.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. We have just about a minute or so left, we were talking about checking your furnaces because obviously we're going to be using those in the near future, and spoke about filters and so forth. I just was wondering about inspecting the heat exchanger and how often that ought to be done.
Okay. Depends on the furnace.
Yeah.
Old furnaces you may be actually be able to see in the heat exchanger. The new ones, in the name of efficiency, are sealed up so tightly you can't see in the heat exchanger.
Yeah.
The only thing that we can do with those is to have a carbon monoxide monitor in the house,
okay,
which is not a bad idea on any of them.
Yes.
And because the new furnaces you just plain can't see. However, the new high-efficiency furnaces are designed so that even if there is a crack in the heat exchanger, it is almost impossible, not completely, but almost impossible to get carbon monoxide back in the house.
Mm-hmm. On older furnaces, is it easy enough for the owner of the house to stick a mirror down there?
If you have a long-handled mirror and a good flashlight, you can do a pretty good job of checking.
Yeah.
But I would still go, if the furnace is that old, I'd probably still want to go with the monoxide monitor.
Okay, absolutely. Well, it sounds like a good idea in any event to have a carbon monoxide monitor, because if you have a cracked heat exchanger, it is leaking poisonous gases, and that's not something you want to have happen.
Right. It's one of those things where, yes, the monoxide monitor that you plug into the wall is set to go off at about 40 parts per million of carbon monoxide. The one that I carry for checking furnaces will go off at about a half a part per million so that we can find incipient problems. And most of the heating contractors have a similar sensitive device.
Well, okay. We'll have to stop there since we're out of time. Our guest has been Hank Spies of the Spies Home Inspection Service in Champaign-Urbana. He has a really helpful website at www.hankspies.com. If you'd like to look at that, you can find all sorts of good information. And he joins us every month on the third Monday of the month at 10 o'clock, with the exception of days like this.
Right.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
AM 580 thanks Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors for its support of Focus 580. Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580. Today's broadcast is made possible with support by Sangamon Auditorium, UIS Springfield, presenting the